checking to see if the equipment is working correctly. I didn't have it on record. Today's date is January 19, 1991. We're in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'm talking to Mr. J.C. Watkins, who's a 1964 principal. He was principal of school in Rockingham, North Carolina, but we're meeting in Charlotte because it's more convenient. Mr. Watkins, I'd like for you to introduce yourself and say you know that this is being recorded.
I'm J.C. Watkins, retired school principal, and I'm aware that what I'm saying is being recorded.
All right, Mr. Watkins, I'm doing some research on comparing the roles of principals from 1964 with those of 1989. And I'd just like for you to tell me some things that, you know, will be helpful for my research. I want you to tell me something about yourself and how you became a high school principal.
Well, from my earliest years, I wanted to be a teacher. And then after I got into teaching, my ambition was to be a principal. And of course, back in that day, this was in the early 40s when I started teaching, principalships, in fact, teaching positions were rather scarce because there was a surplus of black teachers and black principals. So I knew that in order to be a principal, I need to be prepared as well or better than anyone else. So I chose to go to Columbia University, which I had read about and knew was a top school for training school administrators. And I did my training and administration at Columbia University. I was still teaching. And then I was teaching for about 12 years when the principal at the school I was teaching at died. And of course, they had to select a new principal. Now, I didn't automatically get that position. I was rather young. They considered me a little bit too young to be a principal at that time. I believe I was about 29 years old. Mm-hmm. And they were looking, I think, for a little more mature person. And they, of course, I say that principalships were scarce. They had 51 applications for that position, so the superintendent told me. But after, you know, looking at my application and the fact that I had been there for about 12 years in the school and I knew the community, they decided to take a chance with me. And that's how I became principal of the school. And of course, at that time, it was a union school, grade 1 through 12. And I remained there until I left the principalship.
Do you have any educators in your family?
No. Yes, I do. Of course, I was the first of my family to receive a college degree. I came from a large family, rural. In fact, my parents at one time were tenant farmers, but my father bought the farm before I became a teacher. And he owned quite a bit of land when he passed away. I do have one younger sister who is a teacher and has been in Wake County for all of her career. She is head of the exceptional program in Wake County. She became ill about a year ago, and she has multiple sclerosis, and she is not teaching now.
I see. Now I want you to tell me something about the high school where you were the principal. Tell me about the students you had, the teachers you had, how many, and what community, and all of that.
Well, this was in Rockingham, and of course at that time, I became principal in 1955, I believe it was. And at that time, it was called Rockingham Colored High School. Mm-hmm. And the school had about 500 students altogether, probably maybe 300 in the elementary grades and 200 in the high school. The school served not only the Rockingham community, but a few nearby communities. It was a city system. In Richmond County at that time, we had three school systems: the Hamlet City School System, the Rockingham City School System, and the Richmond County School System. There were about 20 members on the faculty when I took over. It was an unusual situation because this was a school I also attended high school at. And And of course, there are advantages and disadvantages for coming back home and teaching. And I certainly found the disadvantages because I had only been away 4 years, and some of the students who were still in high school knew me as a high school student. Mm-hmm. And I had some problems in, you know, for a while until those kind of moved on out. But we had about 400 students, and students were quite different in that day than they became late on, about the time I retired. They were not as assertive as students were late on. They were very polite. You know, they listened and tried to do everything a teacher said do. And you had some discipline problems, but they were not severe and not the kind we hear of in schools today.
Now I'm going to ask you something about your responsibilities that you had and how you dealt with them. The supervision of your personnel and selection of teachers.
Well, at that time, teacher selection was just about 100% done by the principal. The Board of Education sort of took a hands-off policy toward black schools, and unless there was some local black teacher who wanted to get into the system, and sometimes then they might try some pressure means to get in. Now, I was not all that opposed to local teachers because I was local, but I tried when I interviewed and employed a new teacher, I tried to get the best person I could find, and I did turn down local people, and that didn't make me popular when I did that. But I think finally people understood that I wanted good teachers, and they accepted the fact that I didn't hire all local teachers just because they were local. But I had pretty much free run of selecting the staff I wanted. And of course, I had plenty of applications to select from just as they had principals, because when colleges had commencement in the spring, I could hardly do any kind of planning because there was a steady stream of people in the office looking for teaching jobs. And of course, you know, I did at least try to meet all of them and would give them an application form. I couldn't talk it in the length with them because in the first place I didn't have a lot of vacancies and I didn't have the time, but I was courteous to them and I would talk with them and give them applications. And if I had a vacancy late on, I'd look up the applications and screen them out and interview for a position that we might need. You didn't ask me about my role as the principal.
Now, how did you supervise them once you were in Florida?
Okay, all right. I always believed that the principal's role was the improvement of an instructional program. That was my philosophy. Now, not being negative about black principals, but I had observed in the past when I started teaching that a lot of black principals I saw did not seem to be interested in the instructional program. They seemed to be interested in maybe athletics or raising money or some other thing, but not too interested in the instructional program. And I vowed that I was going to try to upgrade the instructional program. Of course, I knew there were certain funds you'd have to raise because, as I said, the school boards in that day took more or less a hands-off attitude toward black schools. You only got the bare minimum of materials and equipment and that type of thing. So if you wanted something above the bare necessities, you had to get out and raise funds for it. But we did not raise a lot of funds after I became principal. We had one fundraiser a year, and that was it. We didn't raise any more funds. And of course, we had some athletic programs, basketball primarily. I was under great pressure from the community to have football, because one of the neighboring towns had football. But it required a lot of, I talked with the principal, and he spent a lot of time raising money to buy equipment and whatnot to operate a football team. And that was what I said I did not want to get into, so I warded off football until my last year there, about the last year when schools started integrating. And of course, the White High School already had football. Mm-hmm. And when they integrated, they were interested in getting black players in. Mm-hmm. And they gave us some equipment to get started in football. And we did have a couple of years when I was as a football team, but I did not push football there. Now, therefore, I spent my time in trying to do in-service with the faculty and upgrading their skills, and also supervising and visiting in their classrooms and seeing what was going on in the instructional program.
What happened if you got one that wasn't doing a very good job?
Well, I guess I developed a technique. I don't ever recall asking, but telling one teacher I was not going to rehire. Mm-hmm. But I had several to leave though.
Oh, you did.
When we talked and they understood what I was looking for and what we wanted to do, and they could see they weren't doing that, and they just voluntarily left. So I did not have to just outright fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Curriculum and instruction. You kind of already touched on it, but that was your main focus.
Yes, curriculum and instruction was my main focus, and I did all that I could to improve the curriculum with the staff we had. And of course, every time I hired a new teacher, I tried to do the very best, and we had an excellent staff. The Lake Street School was looked on in the county as being the top school for in most respects by other black schools. Mm-hmm. And of course, by the white community, was looked on as being the best black school. But we weren't the best school. they thought we were the best black school.
Black school.
Yes. Because we had a good instructional program. We had good teachers. And when the schools were integrated, there was a real rush, because when the schools were integrated, the high school was closed. And the principals, because there were white supervisors in the school, knew the good teachers, and they were really in a rush to select. And there weren't but one or two that people really didn't almost fight over to get. And out of that group, later on, we had a North Carolina Teacher of the Year who came up with me at Lake Street. Mm-hmm. And we also had another teacher who became the Dean of Instruction at the School of Math and Science, who was Lake Street School Biology teacher. So we developed some good teachers at Lake Street.
How'd you deal with discipline?
Well, as I said, discipline wasn't a real... It was a problem. Sure, you had students. I guess forgotten the word for staying out of school, playing hooky, and that's not the word. The term for students who skip school. I can't think of it now.
Truant.
Truancy, yeah. Truancy was, I guess, the biggest problem we had. We had a communication problem with the homes. I never did probably get that going good, because at that time, most of our parents did not have telephones. So the only communication, you know, you had to either go to the home, or you might see one downtown, a parent, to talk to them. So we did not have the kind of communication now between school and home. Now, teachers were asked, they weren't just forced to or required to visit homes, but they were encouraged. When I first started teaching, we were required. We had to visit every home. As a teacher, I recall, we had to visit every home the first month of school. But later on, we did not require it, but it was encouraged, and teachers did visit homes. And so discipline, truancy was the main problem. We had a few other problems, maybe students getting into a fight. Occasionally, you'd have alcohol. When I first became principal at prom time, that was a problem. The kids would know that was prom time, and they had been accustomed to it, and they would have alcohol there. Well, I solved that problem. Well, first of all, I invited all the parents to come to the prom. I sent a letter inviting all parents to be our guests with our students at the prom. Mm-hmm. Then no student could leave the prom until it was over. See, what had been happening before, they'd just go in and out, you know, and intermission, they'd go out and they had alcohol in the car, you know, and they'd drink and come back. But we had a policy that once you came to the prom, you didn't leave till the prom was out unless your parent came to get you. So, you know, now, on one occasion, a boy slipped some in, had it down in the bathroom, we got him. He of course, he suffered the consequences, but that solved the alcohol problem at proms. So those were the kind of problems you had back in that day. Now, of course, on buses, you had discipline problems on buses because you had student drivers and, you know, talking and occasional fight on the bus, keeping noise, that kind of thing. And we dealt with that. Warnings in a lot of cases would take care of it. And then if it got real serious, you'd have to get off the bus, you know, mm-hmm. take them off the bus for a day or two or whatever, you know, depending on the seriousness of the situation. And that usually took care of that kind of a problem.
Tell us about transportation.
Of students?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had buses. We had, when I became principal, we had maybe five or six buses for that school, which was pretty adequate for that school because we only brought students in from about two or three nearby communities, and we didn't have any real problems with transportation. Of course, at that time too, the buses were adequate because the state had developed a policy that you got a new bus, and you kept it until you wore it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in years past, when I was in high school, you got a hand-me-down bus,
mm-hmm.
and it was already worn out when you got it. And I've as a student, on plenty of occasions, we had buses that wouldn't go up a hill. We had to get out and push it. You know, the students had to push it up the hill because it just was worn out.
Mm-hmm.
But when I became principal, that was not the case. We had adequate transportation.
How many buses did you said you had? Five.
I had five or six buses.
All student drivers.
All student drivers. I don't recall having an adult at any time. When I was in high school as a student, we had an adult driver. We only had one bus though,
mm-hmm.
and we had an adult driver. But when I was there, we had all student drivers.
Did you have an assistant?
Before I left there, I did. But when I became principal of that school, I didn't have a secretary, and I taught two classes. So you see, I didn't have much time for supervision of the staff. I had to do all. I didn't have a. You had to do the bookwork for a treasurer. I did have. I asked a faculty member to act as treasurer. And she had one period a day. All teachers had a study hall. High school teachers did, so she could take a study hall period and keep the financial records. But everything else, in the typing, you know, correspondence, I did it all, and it was very time consuming. I just left office when I got through, and sometimes I'd be sitting in the office, and I'd hear the textile mills, they change shifts at midnight. And I'd hear the whistle blow, you know, and I said, well, it's time to go home now. I didn't do this every night, but there were occasions to get the work done. Either took it home, I would take it home sometime. You'd take it home and just come back and do it at night or on weekends because we didn't have clerical help. Finally, I did get a secretary, and I still was teaching maybe one or two classes. Then it was in the, I guess, 60s when Title I came into being. And when Title I came in, there were only two black schools in the city system. And they were I'm sorry, they'd already closed. There was a two-teacher black school out in the edge of town. And that had been consolidated with the Leake Street School before integration. So there was only one black school in the city system. And that was the only school that qualified for Title I funds. Because, you know, it was for low income people, and the white schools, there were three white schools. I believe one of the white schools, there was a school called Petey that was in a mill village.
Mm-hmm.
I think it qualified. But the principal didn't seem to be interested in the funds, so I got most of the funds for Leake Street. And of course, with those funds, we were able to hire additional teachers. We put in a special tutorial program. We had maybe 6, 8, or 10 additional teachers to help students on an individual basis in special classes. And also had I had an assistant principal at that time that came out of that program. And also we had an attendance counselor out of that program, which meant we had somebody to go to homes and visit and help out with the truants and that kind of thing. So I then had adequate staff and materials, because you could use Title I money to buy materials and some equipment. You could get science equipment, furniture. Some schools even bought band uniforms and band instruments. We didn't do that. I put it all in the instructional program. Some bought activity buses out of that money, but we didn't do that kind of thing. However, here again, we didn't get all the benefit of Title I, because we found out later on some of that money was siphoned off and given to the schools that didn't qualify.
Mm-hmm.
And it was discovered, and there was an article written in the Charlotte Observer by one of their reporters who came to investigate, and it made headlines. And after that, no, we did get all the funds in, but until that time, the funds were being siphoned off.
What about the funds, the utilization of funds? How did you get your funds, and how did you use them? The ones that came locally. I know Title I was federal funds, but the funds you got from the city and the county,
prior to that, you had state funds and some local funds. And, of course, I think we got based on the state allocation of monies. There was so much for library, so much for instructional materials, and so much for equipment. It wasn't a whole lot, as I can recall. It might have been a dollar per student, maybe for instructional materials. But whatever we got, that was we had it in a printout from the superintendent's office, with each school's allocation. And of course, we were at liberty to use that as we wanted to, without many strings attached. Students also paid fees.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was $1.25, as I can recall. Now students paid for instructional and then art fee, and that was used to supplement it. Then of course, when you had the NDEA program, that came along somewhere back after Sputnik.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the NDEA, the National Defense Education Act, and that fund provided quite a bit of money for science and mathematics equipment and materials.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to upgrade the curriculum from that money.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cafeteria management.
Well, when I became principal, yes, we had a cafeteria then. I was trying to think back when I was teaching. We did not have a cafeteria, but somewhere in the 50s we built a new addition to the school. At least we built one new building, and it did include a cafeteria, and we had a cafeteria manager, and she was quite efficient. Now I had to do all the bookwork,
mm-hmm.
but she did the menus, of course the ordering of food and took charge of the serving and whatnot. She handled all of that.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, we had maybe 3 or 4 people on the staff in the cafeteria, and the only thing I had was concerned about was keeping the records, and that was quite a chore, because the state, they had a pretty awful system of keeping records. And I don't think our books ever did get balanced.
Everybody told me the same thing, that you never could balance the books for the cafeteria.
Never could balance, because the reimbursements were always coming in 6 months late, you know, and you had to estimate what they were going to be, and it was a hard thing to do it. But we got through with it.
That's good. Building and grounds.
We had a janitor, I think, full-time, and a maid. Later on, we had, I think, 2 maids, and maybe we got another janitor when we got some Title I funds. They were paid very little, cafeteria workers also, until the minimum wage law came into effect. I believe cafeteria people were getting something like about $40, $50 a month. And they required them to work 8 hours a day.
Mm.
As soon as mandatory minimum wage laws came into effect. And of course, when they came into effect, I believe probably it was about a dollar and something an hour, maybe not more than $2 an hour with minimum wage. They had to pay minimum wage, but the same work folk had been doing in 8 hours, you could now do it in 4 hours. Yeah. Because they didn't want to pay, you know, that $2 an hour would have been $16 a day. And that was almost, you weren't getting that much in a week's time before. So they just cut the hours on. Cafeteria workers the same way. The cafeteria workers had to rush out after they served lunch. Sometimes they had to work overtime because they couldn't get cleaned up. They had to come in at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. And if they worked 4 or 5 hours a day, they'd be through at 1 o'clock. And they couldn't hardly get cleaned up and out of that 1 o'clock.
But you were responsible for overseeing the cafeteria, overseeing buildings and grounds.
That's right.
Everything,
yes.
Mm-hmm. What about community relations? How did Leek Street fit into your community? What did the community think about it?
Community, I had excellent support. Prior to my becoming principal, the principal who preceded me had a very different philosophy than I had toward community relations. There was no PTA, just hardly any communication between the school and community. And so the community didn't support the school. It's put a negative attitude. But of course, I was a local person, and I knew people in the community. And of course, I wanted to do it. So when I became principal, I told the community, you know, we needed your help. If we want to have a good school, we need your help. These are your children, and we want to work with you. So I organized the PTA, which was well supported. And whatever we did, we had a student council, which got students involved in school, and with the parents who were involved, we had an excellent, and the community supported me very well. I don't have any complaint, and even today, I mean, they were proud of Leek Street School.
Good. Mm-hmm. How much administrative power and control do you think you had over your school site and your responsibilities?
Well, I wouldn't say it was absolute, but it could have been if I'd wanted to, because the school board and the school administration from the central office, you know, just took a sort of a hands-off policy. And as long as they didn't get any complaints from the school or community, then they didn't seem to much care what went on. So I could be any kind of administrator I wanted to be. I chose to be, and I consider myself pretty democratic, because I involved the staff, and we sat down and we planned together. Now I had the veto power, I'd have the last word, but we'd try to get a consensus, you know. And if I felt, you know, if there's something they wanted to do and I thought it was good for the school, and then they did it. And they knew their ideas were going to be accepted, I mean, and if used if possible. And so we had a pretty good relationship with the staff.
How did desegregation of schools affect your principalship?
Well, and the first year of desegregation, they closed the high school department, and the high school staff and students went to former white schools. The school I was at remained an all-black elementary school, 1 through 8. Okay, it affected me in that my salary was affected. Mm. Because your salary is based on the number of teachers you have. And I lost a third or more of my staff to the white schools. So it affected my salary. I went to the Board of Education, and told them that, and asked them, because in some cases they were supplementing principals who lost teachers because of integration. But they told me they didn't have any funds, or couldn't do it, didn't have any funds. So I was affected salary-wise. Now, as far as, you know, the work of the school, the operation, my work was not nearly as, I didn't have as much to do. Because when I had the high school, I probably spent more time with the high school department than the elementary students. Mm-hmm. And because of our discipline, I'm not saying it wasn't a bad thing, and it wasn't real bad, but you had problems every day you had to deal with. And in elementary school, you didn't have that kind of thing, you know. Teachers, for the most part, dealt with their discipline problems in elementary school. But in high school, I'd end up getting most of the discipline problems. And I didn't have an assistant until my last couple of years, so I had to handle all the discipline problems. So when the high school left, that was certainly a relief. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, I didn't have any extracurricular activities to be concerned with. Like basketball games, you know, two a week and other things. I didn't have that, so I just felt real free when they left.
Except when you got your paycheck.
Except when I got my paycheck.
Did they do anything about it when you went to them and talked to them about it?
No, except to say they didn't have any funds to supplement it, and I just have to make out. But now, that didn't last but 1 or 2 years, because after